The following program represents the views of the speaker and not necessarily those of KCBX. KCBX welcomes the comments of those with divergent views, and our phone number is 805-549-8855. Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Sarah. Happy Healthy Tuesday, since we're staying with the theme, trying to make sure everybody's taking good care of themselves. It's nice to see you this week.
Nice to see you too.
So yesterday was my husband's and mine 35th wedding anniversary. And as our tradition holds for 35 years, we don't do like big extravagant things and usually kind of quiet things. But we also kind of do our yearly check-in or checkup, kind of see how we're doing, talk about how the year has been and things we'd like to improve or things that we really liked or just kind of a health of the relationship sort of experience. And I'd been thinking a lot about the 35th anniversary because it's kind of supposed to be, it's a big milestone, not supposed to be, it is. Although it's not very glamorous because it's between the silver and the gold anniversaries. It's coral traditionally or jade, and neither one of them really meant much to me, but symbolically they're about wisdom and love and commitment and tradition. So I've been thinking a lot about this milestone coming up to this time. And also it just so happens that in my teaching schedule, my lectures on marriage and divorce kind of fall at the same time every spring. And so I'm kind of fresh on the conversations about marriage and that it's in the decline. Less than 50% of the population in this country is married at any one time, which is down from 75% back in 1960. Less people are getting married. More people are choosing to cohabitate. The divorce rate hasn't continued to climb, though. Surprisingly, the divorce rate actually has stabilized and in some ways has dropped over the last 25 years. But that has to do a lot with the amount of people that are choosing not to get married over time. And then the thing that's interesting about who chooses to get married is that those people who have the greatest access to economic resources, higher levels of education, come from families with successful marriages, long-term marriages, tend to bode well, tend to have long-term successful marriages, and tend to be more apt to get married. But if you look at kind of the idea of the contract of marriage, it's a social structure that's supposed to support people and give them kind of a tribe, a place to be and to live safely. The people who tend to need that most are those with the least access to economic resources and very little social safety net. But they tend to have the least access to successful marriages and to the resources that we need to make them work. So I've been, of course, lecturing about marriages and the four types of different marriages and what we see as the future of marriage moving into the future. And then I don't know if you've seen this, but it's on Hulu and it's a special called Mrs. America. And it follows the path of the ERA, our attempt to get the ERA passed. And it checks in with the primary members of the second wave of feminism, Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem, and Phyllis Schlafly, who was at the center of the anti-ERA movement. And the thing about this special is that there's a lot of me that really resonates with Phyllis Schlafly and her position of really being pro-marriage and pro the relationship. And there's a lot more backstory to it, to her experience. But the only reason I bring this up is because one of the things I think really was a challenge to the second wave of feminism and how things have shifted in marriage and how we've seen a huge decline in marriage is that there was nothing there to fill the space that marriage had kind of always held, which was this way of creating family or creating structure that was really important in maintaining the mental health and well-being of the people within the family system, albeit maybe not the greatest structure, because the history of the institution of marriage is that it traditionally has not supported or favored women, granted. But at the second wave of feminism, when women started leaving the home to go into the workforce and marriages, you know, we had the highest rate of divorce in the history of this country, there was nothing there to support the women who wanted to be married and felt comfortable in their marriage and were proud of being homemakers or staying at home and raising their children. And it caused this huge divide between women. And I think it's one of the reasons that the ERA has struggled and the feminist movement has struggled and that marriages have struggled and women who work full time out of the house have struggled, because everyone has a divisive story. There was no alignment. There was no support for all of the different ways that people wanted to choose and create their families. And I think I've always struggled with that because, in all honesty, when I was going to college, I never really had a career goal. And I've said this before, it's nothing new, and my friends would know this, that I didn't go to college with a career goal. I really wanted to get married and have a family. I wanted to have that opportunity to live. Well, if you listen to the intro to the show, wife, mother, I don't know what the third thing is now, wife, mother, licensed marriage and family therapist. Like, I see my primary roles in the world kind of revolving around my life as a wife and as a mom and as a grandmother. And that everything else is kind of my hobby energy, the work that I do, you know, here and at Poly and other places. You know, I see them as kind of the hobby energy, but my other work is what I care most about. So that's been challenging. For the last three, almost four decades, when the world changed in a whole different direction that really didn't value marriage or those roles very much for me personally, but also seeing that without some value in those roles, people really struggled to create relationships that were healthy and thriving. And then the last piece that inspired today's show is that as I was falling asleep last night, thinking about our anniversary, kind of re-upping, thinking about what our next 25 years might be, if we have that many, 5 years for that matter. I've been reading just a book that Todd Rundgren, if you know his music, then you kind of understand Todd Rundgren. But I've been reading his book, and the last page of his book, he talks about getting married at 50. And he'd already been in this relationship for 20 years and he had children. And, you know, why at this point did he decide to get married, to make that commitment, to create that contract? And this is what he said. I confessed that I had withheld myself from my family for reasons I might have justified, but that would not withstand the fact that I had actually coerced them into my worldview and left them to simply deal with it. Yes, I loved them and they knew that, but they did not have all of me, and they knew that as well. Whilst I proclaimed to love them above all, I glorified my work as justification for remaining aloof. And those thoughts as I drifted off made me realize I want to talk about marriage, not from the perspective that we usually do, which is about the struggles of marriage and the failure rate and the institution that doesn't support women and, you know, how repressive it can be. And I don't want to be apologetic for having happy marriages or being proud of those spouses that we have or the time we put into it. I think I want to talk about marriage from this place of joy and comfort and companionship, the things that people find in marriage that we don't often talk about. And I want to lift it a little bit because I think marriage has gotten a bad rap for a long time. Because it's not easy. And we don't teach courses in it. We don't teach young people how to have successful relationships. We don't make premarital counseling mandatory, which is a shame because we then go into marriages without the tools that we need to be successful. It'd be like starting a job without any sort of job training. You would be set up to fail. So if we value our mental health and well-being, and we value our mental health and well-being in the context of relationships, and those of us who have been living in isolation or away from other people for the last 2+ months have maybe come to realize even more how important our intimate partnered relationships are. If we don't talk about them in a positive narrative, then we are destined to live out the negative story. Right? Because the narrative we tell about our lives becomes the reality of our life. And if we always come at that as, well, you know, marriage is not for everybody, or marriage, 50% get divorced, or marriage, you know, it's an outdated institution. If that's the story that we keep living in, then we're inevitably going to make that the truth. So what if we shifted it? What if the story about marriage always was, you know, hey, maybe it's not about marital bliss. Maybe it's not love and passion every second, but what it does offer is so foundational to our mental health and well-being that I support it and am proud of it and work really hard to make it happen well. And I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. And so I invited two friends to come on the show with me today to talk about their marriages as well, because you don't need to hear me talk about it the whole time. I invited two friends who actually have been really honest about their relationships. I feel comfortable telling my stories to them. They feel comfortable telling their stories to me. And so I invited them on to tell their stories to you and thought we'd kind of go around and share kind of our pros of our life as married people and some of our struggles as well. And we'll also invite you into the conversation in the way we've been doing it for the last few weeks. If you'd like to make a comment or have a question, just give us a call at 805-549-8855. That's 805-549-8855. And Sarah will happily read your question over the air and get that information out to us or share your comment as well. If you don't want to call in, you can also share your thoughts and comments on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or through Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. You can always send me an email to Elizabeth@TheReluctantTherapist.com. And you can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org or podcast our show by visiting Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts. Hit subscribe and the show will be uploaded to listen at your convenience. So today my guests are Lorella Ellsworth and Trish Wilson, and we are going to be talking about marriage, the state of our unions, and marriage overall. And we look forward to having you be part of the conversation. We'll be back in a moment to get started. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
We've only just begun to live, white lace and promises, a kiss for luck and we're on our way.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Thanks for joining us today, and thank you to my guests, Lorella Ellsworth and Trish Wilson. Hello, ladies.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks to see you both.
Nice to see you.
So I'm going to let you tell a little bit of your story, how long you've been married, and why you decided to get married, and then we'll kind of jump in from there. So, Lorella, do you want to start out?
Sure. My name is Lorella Ellsworth. I live here in San Luis Obispo. I actually just celebrated my anniversary also. Gary and I have been married for 17 years. I'm 43, so just to put it into perspective. Gary is the first person that I've ever lived with. He's my only long-term boyfriend and now my husband. I decided to get married because he was my first long-term boyfriend. I grew up with a mom and a sister, and my grandmother was the main caretaker. My grandfather had brain damage, and my biological dad was not in the picture. He was a drug addict, and his dad was an alcoholic, so he wasn't in the picture. So I'm from a long generation of mostly just women. And my cousins were female, and I had one male cousin. They were all younger. I'm the oldest grandchild. So Gary is the first man in my life that was a good man, and he's a great man. He's a great father. I don't regret getting married in any way, shape, or form. My mom passed away last year, and he's been a real great support system. I can't imagine my life without my husband in any way, shape, or form. He's like the only family I really have besides my little sister, so, and my children, obviously. So I think marriage is awesome. I want to punch him in his face sometimes, but that's because I want to punch, you know, a lot of people in their face sometimes, but he's perfect for me. We're a great team. We're definitely equals. We have similar jobs. We're just so very, very compatible. And I mean, I think everyone should be married, but no, I don't think everyone should be married. Everyone's different. We're all unique. We have great kids, and we're just a perfect support team. So I love them.
So did you have, when you decided to get married, did you have any hesitations given your family history and, you know,
Not at all. I'm a hairstylist, so we do brides all the time, and I'd never once bought a bridal magazine. I never thought about what my wedding dress was going to look like. I never once considered marriage as a not option or an option. It never crossed my mind in any way, shape, or form. So I have no idea. Like, it just happened. And it was like, yeah, that sounds good. Let's do it. And I didn't think I wouldn't get married. And I never thought I would. He was great. And we did premarital counseling, though. It was fun. It was a really, after we did it, we're like, we should like take dance lessons. And we never did anything again like that. I mean, we do things together, but I've never regretted it. I mean, there's been moments where we thought we would get a divorce, and we went to counseling again, and we worked through all that stuff, but there was no preconceived idea. And I think that might be a really good reason why we've worked so well, is because I didn't have a fairy tale idea of what marriage was supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. And he definitely didn't look like any of the people that my mom was ever with. So maybe that's why I didn't have any doubts in my head. But yeah, great.
And when you got married, was the idea of having a family that made marriage seem, you know, was it just being with Gary, or was it the idea that I'm going to be with him and we're going to create a family together and he'll be a good family man? Like, was that part of it at all?
We actually forgot to talk about if we wanted to have kids before we got married, which is also kind of funny because 3 months after we got married, I got pregnant. And yeah. he's 5 years older than me. So 3 months into the relationship, into the marriage, we were together for 3 years before we got married. I was pregnant, and I was like, oh crap, we forgot to have this conversation also. And he was like, well, I'm like in my 30s, so it sounds about right. And I just was so, I just prayed it was a girl, and it was. I didn't think about that either. I have thought very little about what my future is to be, and it always works out. I think expectations are the main cause of disappointment, though. I think my mom taught me that.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because when you look at some of the reasons why couples end up divorcing, there's a whole list of unrealistic expectations that people go into marriage with that ends up tripping them up. So you're right in that regard. In some ways, the expectations can get us into trouble. But having a plan, you know, to premarital counseling, like having some sort of structure, I think is also inherent. And so Trish, listening to Lorella's story, how was your and Terry's progression towards marriage? And did you always intend on getting married? And how old were you?
No, I didn't always intend on getting married. I had a lot of fun in my younger years and kissed a lot of frogs. And I was 32 when I met Terry. We met very serendipitously in the foyer of a movie theater, waiting for both of our eyes to adjust to the dark. And so then we sat together and that's how we met in a really small little town called Point Arena up in Mendocino County. And he was just a very healthy and kind and respectful person, which is not maybe what I had been dating for in my past. And just really steady and good to be with. And so we started dating up there. And when we just were getting to know each other, he was talking about, oh, when I get married, I want to have 6 children. And so that right there checked him off of my list, because that was not going to happen for me. I didn't even know if I wanted children. And then as you know, our time went on and we got a little more serious, and we talked about things and marriage and our relationship, and he realized that maybe that was a little bit too much for a number of reasons. And so I think we dated about a year and a half before we got married, which just blows my daughter's mind because she doesn't think that was very long. But I was 32 and he was 36, and we knew what we wanted. And so we got married up there and have 2 children, a daughter, Katie, she's 25, and a son, Colin, who's 24. And hasn't always been roses and champagne, but it's a good life.
How many years now?
We are heading into 29 in August.
Okay. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about like the expectations piece, because it sounds like you and Terry had conversations about what you were going to sign up for. Like, it sounds like you actually thought about, hey, if we're going to get married, this is what it's going to look like. What was the contract, kind of the deal you guys made?
Well, he comes from a very solid family. His parents, his mother passed away a couple of years ago, but his parents had been married for 65 years and just, salt of the earth. And he'd never seen his parents fight, which blew my mind. And I came from a pretty dysfunctional family where I did see my parents fight quite a bit. And so that, for me, knowing where he came from and what his values and what his background was important to me, because I knew that he wasn't going to be flaky. I knew he was going to stand by me and just be a real rock in our relationship. And I knew that I could really depend on him. So that was important. And we talked about, you know, what's important in raising children, where we wanted to live, what we wanted to do with that one up in Point Arena. It was very small and isolated. So when our children were little, we ended up moving down to Rio Grande. But basically, it was just a love of the outdoors, a very respectful relationship, lots of humor. He makes me laugh a lot. And so just those kind of basic tenets is what our foundation is based on.
And did you do premarital counseling?
No. Okay. No.
And it's rare that you did that, Lorella, because less than 15% of couples actually do any sort of premarital counseling at this point.
It was the person that we chose to marry us, he did the counseling with us.
Yeah, that's generally helpful if they require it. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guests today are Lorella Ellsworth and Trish Wilson. They are two of my girlfriends. And I said, hey, come on the air. Let's talk about how great it is to be married without being embarrassed about it. And Lorella first said, I never am embarrassed to talk about how great it is to be married. But I find myself, in all honesty, I don't know, Trish, if you feel this way, but I think because so many people do struggle with relationships in general, or haven't had a successful marriage, or have lost a partner for whatever reason, that I feel guilty at times talking about marriage in this positive way, that I feel like I always have to do a caveat of, hey, you know, it's not always great and we struggle, but you know, it's good now. For some reason, Sarah, I'm getting a lot of feedback. Okay.
I don't feel so much like that with marriage. I feel like that more with our children. When I have friends whose children are struggling, I tend to downplay how great our children are. And I don't know why that is. But with marriage, I feel like it was just, it's just a given that it's hard work. And with kids, maybe it's the luck of the draw. I mean, that's hard work too, but you know, I chose my spouse and we're in this together. So when I hear of people who are struggling with their marriage, or who if I've seen someone that's recently divorced and I'm shocked or just surprised, you know, of course I don't go, oh gosh, I'm sorry to hear that. Oh, Terry and I are doing so fantastic.
Right.
But I don't downplay, you know, what our relationship is.
Well, and I don't, and Lorella, you said you have no reservations.
I don't feel guilty saying that my marriage is great, because I also always admit when there are struggles too. Like, I don't ever try to say that it's perfect. I just say that it's also good, because we've managed to work through the struggles too. And I think I'm proud of how hard we work. If I was lying and saying that my marriage was perfect all the time, I would feel guilty for lying. But I understand the kid thing too, because my kids are really easy. I don't feel guilty about that, but I understand. When you said that, my daughter's in the background, she laughed and she said, that's funny, because I'm perfect. But it is like, the marriage is a lot of work. So I'm proud of the work that I put into my marriage, and I'm proud of the things that we've overcome. But at no point have I ever tried to pretend like we haven't struggled. And we've been put on a pedestal at points in time, because we got married young. I was 23 when I met Gary, and we got married at 26, and we had a baby at 27. And I mean, I bought a house at 24. I opened a salon. I did a lot in my 20s. And we were kind of put up on this pedestal, and we made some mistakes, and we lost a house. We lost a salon, and we kind of fell off that pedestal. And I was like, I didn't ask to be put up on that pedestal. So if you're sad that I didn't live up to your expectations, that's your fault. Like, these struggles are my struggles. They're not your struggles. So I'm proud of my mistakes, because I learned from them. If I didn't learn from my mistakes, that would be an embarrassment, but I'm not embarrassed of my shortcomings, because I learned from them.
Well, and I think it's also hard for a lot of couples to even overcome challenges and still be strong. So the fact that you and Gary went through these really big losses, and also losing your mom last year, and just got closer together, is a testament to both of you as individuals. But it's also rare, because most couples start to see the fragility of intimacy in general when they hit upon tough times. Because when we're struggling, or we're anxious, or we're sad, we tend to want to turn and try to blame someone. And that then ends up being the person we're supposed to be closest to. But for some reason, you know, I don't know how you did it, but you and Gary somehow were able to turn inward together.
We do really well when we spend more time together. Like, some people, like, they say distance makes the heart grow fonder. That's not our case. Like, sometimes when we're doing really well, we have a tendency of like kind of doing our own thing. And that's actually when we bicker more. Like, the more time, like, this quarantine together has been really good on our family. The kids haven't been fighting. Gary and I haven't been fighting. When we rely on each other, we do really well.
I think that's a really good point, because I would say that's true for Chris and I, that the more time we are together, we get into a rhythm and we do really well. But we struggle when we are apart and we have to come back together, or the time right before he's going to leave for some period of time, and then the kind of struggling. But yeah, same thing. I think that is the balance too with marriage, that you're supposed to have autonomy and connection, right? Autonomy and time apart, but to find that dance of how much is enough and how much is too much, it is also part of the art. And I think that instead of looking at those things in marriage and how do we find that balance or how do we spend time together and make it healthier, most couples tend to quickly jump to, I guess we don't love each other anymore, or I guess we don't communicate anymore, instead of thinking what's happening in our lives right now that's preventing us from being able to be more intimate with each other. And Trish, I'm going to jump to you for that one, because a few years ago, you called us all, our small group. We have a very tight knit group of friends that look after each other. And that's another really key point to successful marriages, is to surround yourself with couples who have similar values and who support each other. And you called a couple of us and said, hey, Terry and I are struggling right now. So for Valentine's Day, come over and let's, you know, talk about what you're doing and how your life is. And we need to be reinvigorated. Can you talk about that?
Sure. That's exactly what was going on. I don't remember what year that was, but it was important for me to be around other couples who I respect and whose relationships I respect. And I know that when the kids went off to college, that when our youngest finally left, that was when we really had a hard time, because just like you were just saying, we would get up on a Saturday and I would say to him, well, what are you doing today? And he'd say, well, I'm going to go surf. What are you doing? Well, I'm going to go play tennis. And never did those tracks, you know, never did we say, okay, well, let's meet up at 2 and go for a hike. It was just him doing his thing and me doing my thing. And we didn't even realize, I guess, that was happening until it just became critical that we weren't spending time together and little things were starting to get on us. So for me, it was important to have that dinner with the other people so that we could talk about struggles that other relationships have had and get opinions and find out, because no marriage is perfect and everybody has their hurdles, see what other people have done. And we ended up going and talking to a therapist, and it absolutely saved our marriage. It just was, it's been really good so far since then. And we're really enjoying each other a lot more, and we're doing things together. And it just was a chance to bring out what we both didn't know, but we're living through. We just were kind of going through the motions. We're just like roommates. And so I think the counseling was super, super important. And the fact that we both wanted to have that counseling, when I told him I want to go to a counselor, I want to try and save our marriage, he said, well, I'm not sure I do. And that broke my heart, because to me, if he wasn't into continuing, I just wanted him to want it to work. And so that was a couple weird weeks. And then I don't live with ambiguity very well. And I finally just said, look, we gotta do something here. We need to decide. And he said, yeah, I've been thinking about it and I want to make this work. And so that's what happened. And it's been real good.
But you brought up some really key points, because it does sneak up on you. Even in the best of marriages, you're going along and you're doing the work of being married. You're raising your kids, right? You're supporting each other. You're keeping the house running, and it's good and it's nice and it gets comfortable. But then something shifts, like the kids going off to school, or maybe someone changes jobs, or you move and you don't really notice, but the rhythm changes in the relationship. And for whatever reason, it's easiest to let go of nurturing our most intimate relationships. And usually, like, you stop having sex because you kind of don't have the time, and then you kind of lose the interest, and then you kind of stop talking about things. But it's not, it rarely is a big fight, right? There's rarely like this big moment where you blow up at each other and then all bets are off. It's slow, and it all of a sudden you're in a spot that you realize this isn't going to be easy to get out of. Because in a fight, you can blow up, you both have your say, you stomp to another, right? Then you get through it. But when it's something that kind of is slow and eating at you, it's harder to come back from, because it's it's insidious. Something has shifted. And with Terry saying, I'm not sure I want to go to counseling, it's tiring to go to counseling. It's tiring to have to dredge up the stuff, because when you say, I want to work on our marriage, that says front, things aren't going well. We're going to have to put in effort.
And the other thing, what his message said to me was, rather than it's going to be effort, was like, I just don't know if I even like you or love you that much anymore. And you know, we were really good parents. We have great kids. Parenting came very easy. We were on the same page a lot, and then that was gone. And I mean, we'll always be their parents, but they were off, and we didn't have that common denominator anymore. And we needed to come back and find something that we both could work on together and be successful at together. That was the key.
Right. Having that. Yeah. You need to have that common goal. I think that's why a lot of couples end up getting a pet, you know, they get another animal so you can have that something to nurture again, or move and buy a house and, you know, just have another project. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guests today are Lorella Ellsworth and Trish Wilson, two of my girlfriends who've been married for a long time, and we're talking about marriage from a place of positivity, that the story about marriage in our lives is one that marriage is good, and we like it, and it's who we are in many ways. And so we're inviting you to be part of the conversation as well. Our number is 805-549-8855. If you'd like to make a question or ask a question or make a comment, Sarah will share it with us on the air today. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back in a moment to continue this conversation and to take your calls.
I walk halfway around the world just to sit down by your side. I would do most anything, girl, to be the apple of your eye. But troubles, they may come and go, but good times, they're the gold. If the road gets rocky, girl, just steady as we go. Any place you wanna go, you know I've been next to you. If it's treasure, baby, you're looking for, I search the whole world through. No troubles, they may come and go, but good times, they're the gold. So if the road gets rocky, girl, just steady as we go. When the storm comes, I need shelter me. I don't say a word, and you know exactly what I mean. In the darkest times, I shine.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And my guests today are Trish Wilson and Lorella Ellsworth. And we're talking about our marriages that are kind of longstanding. Lorella and Gary just celebrated 17 years. Trish and Terry have celebrated their 29th year. Chris and I are 35 years married, 40 years together. So as I said at the top of the show, I don't really remember a time in my life that Chris isn't part of it. We've been together since I was 19. And so it's what I wanted. I had very, you know, a lot of people were talking about, I want to be a doctor when I grow up, or I want to be a lawyer or an actress or a hairstylist. There were things I was interested in doing, but I think the thing I knew I always wanted was to be married and to have a family and have this relationship. And it makes sense then that I became a therapist, because my work is all around building relationships and tending to relationships and then teaching about relationships. I definitely have had a strong sense of that being my identity, or part of a large part of my identity, since I was young. And I'm always curious about what drove other people into their relationships and why they choose to stay with them. Because even in the best of marriages, even in the happiest of marriages, there are times when you feel done with that marriage. And as Trish was saying before the break, you know, you come to that moment where you have to recommit, re-up to the relationship, rewrite the contract. When I think probably one of the most painful times, it probably wasn't the worst time in my marriage, but one of the most painful times in my marriage was when, I think it was right before our 20th anniversary, and I can't remember if it was our 20th or 25th, but Chris had put together this really special re-vow. He wanted to ask me to marry him again and redo our, you know, vows and kind of commit to each other again. And we were standing on this bridge and he asked me if I would, you know, want to marry him again and, you know, redo our life. And I was caught off guard. My first reaction was, I don't know if I want to do this for another 20 years, to be honest. I can do this anymore. I actually think I'm done. I'm not feeling it. And it was shocking to me that it came out of my mouth. And then it was shocking to him. But as Trish was saying, it also was this moment where I realized, oh, we've gotten really far apart from each other. Like, although we sleep in the same bed every night, we've gotten really far apart. And it kind of started this quest of reinventing who we were, but also reinventing ourselves in a way. Because a lot of times our marriage, my marriage, struggles when I'm not doing well. Chris is pretty steady. He kind of just is steady in life. But when I'm kind of dipping and diving or, you know, not doing well, it kind of takes down a lot of things with it. So I've noticed that as well. So Laurel, I'm curious, you know, Trish talked about their kind of pinnacle moment. This was ours. Has there been a time in your 17 years was a make it or break it?
Yeah, there's been two difficult moments. Our first difficult moment was I decided to open a second salon when I was pregnant with my second child. And I was very preoccupied. And then out comes the second baby. And then we have the second salon. And I think I probably ignored my husband for almost a full year. And Dashiell was getting a little bit older. And I think I was just so far disconnected from my husband. I was paying all the attention to like the second salon and these new employees and this new child. And I think Gary got real depressed. And it came to a point where he pretty much just asked for a divorce. And I fell apart completely, like no other. And I don't fall apart. Like, I do not fall apart. And look, we went to marriage counseling and the counselor was pretty straightforward and was like, I'm pro marriage. And Gary, of course, was, you know, there for it. And we worked through it and we did not get a divorce. I pretty much said no to the divorce, first of all. And he listened and we didn't get a divorce and we worked through it. And it took a while to like build up confidence between both of us. And he had to have confidence in me because I was disconnected completely. And then the second time was when my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. It was okay in the beginning, but when she got really, really, really sick, I was so sad. And I was just so sad. I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know what to do. And I just didn't feel connected to anybody. I just felt so depressed. And I thought that maybe I wanted to just push away everything. And I told Gary that maybe I wanted to move out. I don't know why that sounded like a good idea at the time, but he said,
I kind of want to run from the pain, right?
I wanted to just get away from everything. Like, I didn't want to go home ever. I wanted to drink a lot of alcohol and escape, make a kind of numb feeling. And Gary didn't know what to do with me at first, but he was very, very patient and very, very loving and just was really slow and very coddling to me and just took it really slow and kind of nursed me back into a normal person again. And so there's those two pivotal moments. And it was the first time I noticed how strong of a person he was, because he's just so sensitive and sweet. And I don't think I realized how strong of a person he was, because I'm such a bulldozer all the time that I just feel like I'm always so strong that I didn't realize what a kind, strong person. He's always just been the sweet, kind person, but he's a very strong man. And trust me, I needed it. And he's been my rock it's been a really hard 4 years for me. And I feel this year, everyone thinks this is the worst year because of this crazy thing. And this year's been not terrible for me. And He's been here. It's been 1 year since my mom died this April, and I'm very grateful to be married. We'll say that.
Yeah, it becomes that place of respite and comfort and companionship and all the beautiful things that you talk about marriage when you're standing taking your vows or you look at it, is that it's the place you feel safe and held and in sickness and in health. And I think we forget how important those vows are, you know, to cherish and hang on through sickness and in health and rich or poor.
And both times we were stronger after. Yes. Once he pushed me away, one time I pushed him away, and we came back much stronger both times.
Which is the testament, again, I think, to the commitment to making it for the long haul, because there is the actual commitment piece. So listening to that, Trish, what comes up for you?
I am loving my marriage and my relationship with my husband right now. We talk about being old people together, and you know, we have a lot of good years, but certainly we're getting gray and we're moving a little slower, and it's just, I look forward to just growing old with him. When I retired last year, we went on a month-long camping trip in the West United States, and we had a blast. We didn't have any itinerary, we didn't know where we were going, and we just got in our Volkswagen camper van and we just went, and it was so fun. Both of us loved it. And we just connected. We laughed. We had a great time. We both were very calm with each other. Never any strife. And so we're looking forward to just lots of adventures like that. Now that the kids are gone, financially, we're going to be okay. You know, as long as our health, that's the main thing right now at this point in our life is our health. And it just feels really safe and secure and loving. It's a really nice place to be.
For, you know, there's criteria about what makes a successful marriage. You know, if you want to get to the scientific piece, they've broken down, researchers have been able to break down kind of some of those tenets of a strong marriage. And one of them is, you know, the companionship piece. Another is being financially secure. And it doesn't say anything really in the research about how much money that is, but it's, you know, finances are the number one stressors for couples to overcome or to deal with, and probably for all people. And right now, a lot of people are feeling that. But if you have a little bit of the luck of the draw to have your finances be secure that you can keep up, then that's a real foundational strength for couples. But then after that, you build on things like being each other's caregiver and having a common sense of humor and enjoying each other's company and having a shared sense of spirituality or religiosity. And really, you and I have never talked about that before, because when they talk about in the research a shared religiosity, it doesn't necessarily mean sharing a church that you go to, but some sort of kind of spiritual center. And what does that look like for you? And when you got married, was there, you know, a spiritual union along with that as well?
That's kind of we were just talking about that last night. My family background, my mom was an atheist and my grandma was very, very Catholic. And Gary's very scientific, but I think that our moral compass is so aligned and so similar. I definitely believe that there is like a higher faithful spiritual, but I think that we're going to have to be on a path of what our spiritual beliefs are, because I do kind of believe in a spiritualness, and Gary's still very scientific about it. So I don't know how to answer that question right now.
I know you keep looking over your shoulder. I want to drag him in and say, what is...
No, he just got home. And we were literally just last night talking about how church doesn't believe in science. I'm like, that's not true. There's a lot of church that believes in science, and how you can't scientifically explain our emotions and how uniquely different we are. So of course, there's church and science that go together. So it was just funny because he just sat down and I was just thinking because I think that our moral compass is different than science. So it's just funny. So So it's very
the way our souls align in some way.
And that was what we went through with our premarital counseling. Is it wasn't so much about our specific future plan with kids and everything. It was all about like our moral compass and like how we feel about like our upbringing, how we were raised, and like all these things, how similar Gary and I really are. It wasn't exact specific plans for like how many kids we wanted to have and where we wanted to raise our kids or what city we needed to be in. It was more about our beliefs in like the world, you know. We're very aligned in that way.
I know that when, you know, people have asked, how did you know your husband was the one? It comes up every quarter when I teach the mate selection piece. His mate selection is very actually scientific as well. There's a lot of research showing, you know, nothing is perfect because you can find the perfect mate on paper and then life happens. You can lose money or someone dies that can mess it up. But there is kind of a scientific approach to choosing that mate. And when I go through that, my students will say, well, how did you know? And the thing, there's two things that always stand out for me. And I'm curious to know how this was for both of you. Two things. Chris was the first guy that I dated that I did not lie to or make something up, or, you know, like from the onset, I just wanted him to know the true things. I wasn't trying to pull something off, or I in my head, I knew never tell this guy a lie, just be true. And the second piece was he felt familiar. Like from the very beginning, he felt like home was the only way I could describe it, that this was a familiar place I needed to be. Does either of those things sound?
Gary wasn't annoying.
For me, Terry was the first man that I felt that I could spend the rest of my life with. At 32 years old, like I said, dated my fair share, and it was just always real fun, but there never was that one of those guys going to be my forever guy. They didn't have it. And he checked a lot of those boxes. And so I could just see that future out there.
Yeah, it's the repetition I could handle with him. Can't hear you.
Another part of the Another part of the mate selection piece is understanding the other person's dark or their strange. I'm not really sure the best term for it, but it's easy to love people when they're showing their good side. You know, that's why dating is fun, because you both come at it with your best self coming forward. So it's really easy to fall in love with people when they're only showing their good side. But the true measure of someone you can spend the rest of your life with is, are they someone whose dark side or strange side you also can resonate with or are comfortable with? Because everyone has their not so stellar way of being. And the one person whose dark side or strange side you actually can live with is a better idea of who your person is. I'm not really sure if that explained it well, Lorella, but
I know what you mean. I always say to everyone, like, you have to realize like who a person is, and can you live with that? Like, you know, if a person's flaky, you don't count on them or whatever. So yeah, I don't know how to word it any better, but like, you just have to accept a person for who they are. And if who they are, you can accept, then you move forward. You just don't expect them to be anything other than who they are, kind of a thing. Yeah. Gary's pretty consistent. Like, he's not, like what I said, like the repetition, I could handle the repetition with him. It wasn't, there was
day to day.
Yeah. Like, I knew that was a person that's good and bad was aligned with my good and my bad. Like we didn't conflict ever. Like it was, I could handle his mood swings. I could handle, we could swing together.
You had the balance. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And my guests are Lorella Ellsworth and Trish Wilson. And we're talking about marriage. And in our last few minutes, I want to talk about the priority piece, the commitment piece. Because at the beginning of the show, I read this paragraph from Todd Rundgren's book that I had just finished reading. And he talked about getting married at 50, although he'd been in this relationship for 20 plus years. But he decided he needed to make that commitment. He wanted to make that commitment to get married. And a little more of the backstory is because his partner had basically called him at work one day, he was out working on an album, and said, I'm done and I'm leaving. And I'll be gone when you get home. And that was this wake up call for him. And he said that he realized that he had never really given his full self to his family, that he had justified that as being, you know, work was the most important thing. And that was okay. I think he says, although I proclaimed to love them all, I glorified my work as justification for remaining aloof. And I think one of the things that I find most challenging in our culture today is that we glorify work on such a high level, and we don't encourage people to put that same level of energy into their relationships, that somehow devoting yourself 100% to another person is considered not a viable goal or a healthy goal, but somehow committing yourself 100% to work is a more lofty idea. And I'm just curious of your thoughts on those two things as we wrap up today. Trish, let's start with you.
Well, yeah, I think that goes kind of back to what you were talking about at the beginning with the ERA. And, you know, women, I have some friends who are just very, very busy and very overworked. And it's not always a good thing. They've got lots of different jobs going on and are here and there, and they've got their family, and they're pretty torn. When I was teaching, the first time I was teaching, when Terry and I met, and then we had our children, and I remember coming home one day and the caretaker handing my daughter to me, and my daughter crying. Katie started crying, being given to her own mother because I was the unfamiliar one. And that was it. I said, no. And Terry and I were on the same page. We said, I quit. I quit a great teaching career, stayed home, raised the children, and then went back when they were older. But it's really hard in the moment to see the importance of human relationships when you've got a lot of other things going on. You know, there's that saying, and I can't quote it, but when you're 90 years old, no one will care how many days you were at work or how many promotions you got, but you'll remember the tears of your child, or, well, I don't know, whatever it was. But that's the thing, is like, you look back on it and those relationships are forever. And it's very, very important. And it, you just can't tell somebody that's young about it. You have to live it and hope that you can put those priorities where they belong. And not to say that work isn't important. It absolutely is. But I think the balance and not getting quite so hung up on the money, because you can make it work.
And Laurel, you get the last 30 seconds here. I'm sorry.
If you learn to compromise, like if a woman compromises in her relationship with a man, and I mean compromises equally, I think sometimes it's looked down upon like you are being controlled, when even if it's an equal compromise. So I think sometimes it's hard to be respected in that situation. And I think it's kind of stupid, because Gary and I have a very equal relationship. We both work 3 days a week. We both are with the kids the same amount. So it is a true compromise. And I think sometimes it's hard to get that balance. You're either all in or you're all out. And it's just, people can just do their own thing and shut up.
Thank you so much, Laurel and Trish, for being my guests today. This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can find me on my Facebook page or Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. Send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. As always, I appreciate you supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back next week to continue our conversations.